Today, in part three of our series, Stories to Live By, we examine the parable of the talents. We long to hear the Father say to us, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." But where are you with stewardship, duty, and accountability? How do we fight off human nature to avoid condemnation in the end? Here's Pastor Seth.
We are reading a very familiar parable today, the parable of the talents. I'd like to read it for us. "It is just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another he gave 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability, and he went on his journey. Immediately the one who had received the 5 talents went out and traded with them and gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received the 2 talents gained 2 more. But he received the 1 talent, went away, and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those slaves who came and settled accounts with them. The one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, 'Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I've gained 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' Also, the one who had received the 2 talents came up and said, 'Master, you entrusted 2 talents to me. See, I've gained 2 more talents. And his master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful with a few things. I put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' Then the one who had received the 1 talent came up and said to him, 'Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid and went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, I have what is yours.' But his master answered and said to him, 'You wicked, lazy slave. You knew that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I scattered no seed.' And the idea is, if that was true, then you would have ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival, I would at least have received my money back with interest. Therefore, take away this talent from him and give it to the one who has the 5 talents. For to everyone who has, more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does not have shall be taken away. Throw out the worthless slave into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Well, what I learned as a teenager and all through the course of my adult life, still continue to learn, is something that is not just unique with teenagers or unique with me. It's very easy, as we'll see in this parable, to live as one who is entitled. To just assume that everything I have is mine and I can use it however I want to. There's really no amount of accountability or that I'm serving somebody else or doing something for someone else, like this parable of the talents. Now, I love parables because parables do something that just going through a teaching lesson, we can go through a lesson about who God is and accountability to God and one day and our life and stewardship and all that stuff. And most of us who've been around would go, "Yeah, check. Check, check, check." And you'd walk out of here no different, and I would walk out of here no different than when I walked in. Because those teaching points have a tendency to affect your head, but a parable has a chance to act like a mirror and help you see who you are, to see your heart. It exposes what's inside as you look at sort of this third person in the story. Oftentimes, we see ourselves. And that's true with this particular parable. The beginning of this chapter starts off with "the kingdom of heaven is like," and Jesus tells 3 different parables. And so the idea here of this parable is it tells us something about who God is, and it tells us something about who we are, and it tells us something about how life is supposed to work, and then what our tendency is to do to not go along with the program. So let's look back at this. The first thing he's going to do is talk about that we are stewards and not owners. Just like me as a teenager in my home, I was not the owner of my house. I didn't own the washer, the dryer, the refrigerator. I was a steward. He starts off again, it would be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Now, it's a simple parable. There are 4 characters in the parable. There's the man, as he says here, and we learn that he's a very wealthy man, as we'll see in just a moment, independently wealthy. And he is going on a journey, as this starts here. Later on in the parable, we learn that it's a long journey. We're not told how long, but I want you to think in terms of maybe like 20 years. Maybe this guy was moving, he and his wife, to Hong Kong, and they were going to set up a whole different business there. And what he does is he entrusts his property back here at home to 3 particular servants. Now, when he entrusts his property to them, he is not giving them the property. This is not a gift. He is saying, I want you to take what I'm giving you, these talents or this money or my holdings, and I want you to invest them, do something with them, make a return on investment. There's no question that the money still belongs to the man as the owner. Now, he says he gave 1 5 talents of money to another 2 and another 1. Well, what's a talent of money? Well, a talent of money is sort of just an amount, sort of like our dollars. And scholars have tried to figure out, well, how much is a talent? What would a talent be in today's currency? And there's a wide spectrum of belief or a sort of opinion on this, because it's really hard to nail this down. But you might think on the low end of 1 talent would be maybe like $20,000. So 5 talents would be $100,000. That's kind of the low range. And the upper range was something of 20 talents might, or 5 talents might be like 20 years worth of salary. So you have, no matter which one of the servants you're talking about, whether the 5 talent guy, or the 2 talent, or the 1 guy, every one of them were given a significant amount of money. We would call it a small fortune. Now, to try to get an idea to personalize this story, this parable, I want you to think about that you're the man. And you've got about 20 years until you retire. And you've been a little slow on getting some retirement money in, all, you know, Social Security, all that. But, you know, oh, golly, finally need to do this. And so you and your wife sit down, and you have money that you're now setting aside out of your paychecks that goes into a retirement account. And you go to several different investment houses and interview some people, and you finally see somebody you think is hardworking and honest, and they'll do a good, credible job of investing your money. And you finally say, that's the guy. Now, the reason you're going to say that's the guy is because in the final analysis, you not only think that the person is competent to handle your money, but he's also trustworthy, and that there's going to be no question that he's going to invest your retirement money as if it was his own father or mother's retirement money, or invest it as if it was his own retirement money with a 20-year expiration date. But that's what you would do, and that's what the master is doing as he's entrusting, think of it as retirement, your retirement account, to each of these 3 guys. The investment guy is simply a steward. He does not own your retirement money. Now, the second thing we learn in here is that we are duty-bound and we are not free agents. As we live our lives, we're not just, well, we just want to do whatever we want to do with whatever we have. That approach to life does not end well, as we will see in this parable. We have a duty. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once, put his money to work, gained 5 more, so also the one with the 2 talents gained 2 more. Now, I want you to pretend this scene is happening at Long Beach Harbor. The master has taken the 3 of you in his limo. They're up there. He and his wife are getting ready to get on a big ship. They're going to head west, maybe to Hong Kong, let's say. And again, we don't know how long he's going to be gone, but I would, you know, just ballpark it at about 20 years. And the 3 guys are standing there, and you're one of the first 2. Getting ready to He takes off, he and his wife on the ship, leaves the harbor. Now, what Jesus tells us about the first two guys, and I want you to pretend you're one of these first two guys, he says three things. He says, let's back up a slide. The man who had received the five talents went at once, is the first thing he says. So the ship is off, and you're standing there with the five talents, or the two-talent guy, and as soon as the ship is off, you get on your phone, and you call Uber, and a car's there within about 3 minutes, and you take off down to downtown L.A., and you go up into a high-rise to the investment house, and you immediately you log onto your computer, and you start investing that man's money. Went at once. The second thing it says is he put his money to work, and in the Greek language it says he engaged in business. Well, what did he do? Well, it doesn't really give us any specifics, but you can imagine, well, maybe he invested in a company. Maybe he bought a franchise in something. Maybe he bought some stocks or some mutual funds or some T-bills or some municipal bonds. But the idea is he was working hard, engaging your money for you as best he could. First thing, one at once, put his money to work and gained five more, doubled his money. Now, when I was a kid, I remember watching my dad sit at the dining room table with the newspaper. And one of the things he always did was he'd go to the business section and he'd open up on the dining room table after dinner, and he would look at all these columns and columns of print about that big. I said, "Dad, what are you doing?" He said, "I'm looking at my investments." And I can still remember some of the stocks that he had invested in many, many years ago. And every night he did that. And one day I went in and said, "Well, Dad, what do you do investing? How do you do that?" And the first thing that I remember now was him telling me about the rule of seven. Rule of seven, what's that? He said, "Well, as you're trying to invest," he said, "what you're trying to do is double your money every 7 years." Wow, double your money every 7 years. Now, in today's economy, that sounds rather far-fetched. But back then, that was the goal. And if you had about a 10 or 11% average yield on your investment, you could do that. 7 years later, you had doubled your money. I said, "Well, Dad, how do you do that?" He said, "Well, you have to give careful attention every day to your investments. Stocks that you bought, mutual funds, you have to look, are they going up? Are they going down? What's happening in the market in general? What's happening in the industries in which you're investing?" And what I learned was that the rule of seven doesn't just happen. Threw my money in and forgot about it for 7 years. My dad was moving things whenever things needed to be moved. It's kind of like these two guys. They were diligently moving the money, and at the end of however many years, they had doubled their money. Now, when I think about these two servants, I think, what motivated these guys? What would motivate you to do this? Maybe they thought about the owner, the master, and maybe they were grateful to have a significant job where they were doing something important as opposed to doing all kinds of other things without a job or part-time employment, making minimum wage. Maybe they were very grateful to him. Maybe there was a sense of duty, a sense of honor, that their name was on the line and they needed to give their best shot. Maybe they thought about the privilege that they'd been given. Maybe they thought about the possibility of reward. Now, those are the first two guys. The third guy, the man who had, verse 18, the man who had received the one talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. Now, put yourself back at the Long Beach Harbor. The ship leaves. The first two guys get an Uber, and they head downtown. The third guy goes back to his car. He drives back to the master's house, goes in the garage, gets the shovel, takes the money that's been entrusted him, goes out to the far corner of the property, digs a hole, plops the money down in there, covers it over with dirt, walks back, puts the shovel in the garage, and leaves. And there the money sits. How long? 10 years? 15? 20 years? Now, as I read this, I think, while these other two guys are downtown up in a high-rise working hard Monday to Friday to figure out how to double their master's money, what was this guy doing? Well, we're not told what he's doing. We're just told what he's not doing. The money is hid. He has nothing to do with it. Now, again, to personalize this, imagine that this money is your retirement money. And 20 years pass, and you go to the investment house, take you and your wife go up the elevator, and you walk in, lavish office, and you want to see this guy, but he's not in today. And so they get a gal who's working there, and she sits down, and hello, Mr. Gatch, hello, Mrs. Gatchel. We're going to retire, and I want to check on my retirement account and figure out how much we're going to take out. And she logs in, and she brings up your account. And when you look at the screen that she's looking at, you're aghast. Because the amount that's in the account is the exact same amount you deposited 20 years ago. And what? Was this investment guy so bad that whatever amount of money he gained, he also lost? That couldn't be. Nobody's that bad. And so you say, well, can I look at this? And she says, yeah. She gives you the keyboard, and you go over to the link that says Account Activity. And you click on Account Activity, and when that screen pops up, there's only one account activity. Initial deposit and that amount. And there is nothing else on that page. Not a single thing. Nothing was bought. Nothing was sold. Nothing was traded. No stocks, no bonds, no municipal bonds, no CDs, nothing. Now, Mr. Gatchel and Mrs. Gatchel are sitting there after 20 years. What are you thinking? What's going on inside of you? You are going to be one mad person because somebody, this fella, has done a dastardly thing. I don't know if you would say it's criminal. So you leave there, and you go get on Yelp. And you call some of your friends, and you tell them about this investment house. And what happened? And as we say, the story goes viral on the internet. What would you do if you were the master, and this guy was handling your investment accounts? Well, the third thing on the inside of your handout is the principle of accountability. Accountability is something that teenagers particularly hate, but adults are not that fond of it either, it seems to me. Accountability is simply providing a structure that more enables you and me to do what we're supposed to do. Accountability. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. Settled accounts with them. This is accountability. Now, I remember, I don't know how many years ago this was, but I was really tickled by some software, I guess, engineer guy or writer, who created a program that could be used at any work. You could download it to your work computer, where with just the touch of one button, the things that you were not supposed to be looking at on your work computer suddenly disappeared when the boss showed up. Now, the boss showing up is what we call accountability. Now, that's just the very bottom level of accountability. Teenagers have a difficult problem with accountability, but really, as adults, we do too. But when you think about accountability, you think about really three things. There's privileges that we have, that we've been given. There's commensurate amount of responsibility for those privileges. And there is an amount of accountability that goes with this. Now, as you're raising your teenagers, these things are always at work, whether you're aware of it or not. And at work, work operates in the same way. If you've been given more privilege, or if your teenager has been given more privilege, that means usually there's more responsibility. And with greater privilege and greater responsibility comes greater accountability. if we violate our privileges, we pushed for too many privileges, or if we shirk some of our responsibilities, then what happens with accountability is it gets higher. Why are you always checking up on me? Don't you trust me? The teenager complains, and the short answer is no. Not yet. I'm hoping to one day. And it takes a while for the teenager to learn privilege, responsibility, and accountability. Now, if you don't want greater accountability on you, whether the teenager is at work, what do? You increase your level of responsibility to the point where your boss doesn't, the accountability factor goes down. There's not a need to check up on you because the boss is pretty sure if I give you a project, it's going to get done. The opposite is also true. If the boss is always having to check up on your projects because you're not getting them done, you can expect accountability to go up. It's not because the boss is mean. It's because what he sees is your responsibility has been dwindling. The boss comes home and he settles accounts. It's time to sit down and find out what did you do with Mr. and Mrs. Gatchel's retirement money. The fourth thing we see in this story is that Jesus illustrates, he gives us five little capsules of what God is like. Five capsules of what God is like. Sort of reveals the heart of God. The man who had received five talents brought the five. Master, you entrusted me with five talents. See, I have gained five more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The guy with the two talents gives the same report. He doubled the two. And the master gives the exact same verbiage to the second guy that he gave to the first guy. Now, what do we learn about God in this particular story? When he says, well done to these guys, when I think about that, the first thing I think about is how many people at work live their whole life, your whole career, and there's not a boss that says, I really liked what you did. You really did a good job. I'm glad you're working for us. You make a difference here. Now, every human heart hungers for validation. We all want somebody to say, I'm over here. Does anybody notice? You know, we might get a thank you every once in a while. But what about a commendation like this? Well done. The second thing he says, good servant. And the idea here is something that I think in the heart that says, there's something in me that wants to know that I did a good job. I didn't just slide in. I just didn't do the minimum. I just didn't do enough to get by. I took this thing, this responsibility, and I did something good with it. Now, there are times in life where it's important. It better be important enough to me, and that's all the validation I need. That's just how life is. But there are other times where it's really nice for somebody else to say, I really liked what you did. That was really good. The third thing he says is faithful servant. Faithful servant. And the idea here is something like this. For somebody to say to you, I knew I could trust you with this. Didn't give it a second thought. I just knew, knowing the character of who you are, it would get done. Didn't know how. Didn't need to know how. I just knew you're the kind of person that's going to be faithful to do what you said you're going to do. And then the fourth thing he says is, I will put you in charge of many things. And here in the work world, think about promotion. You just got promoted. You just got a corner office. You just got a raise. You just got some more perks. You just got a vice president attached to on your door plate. And the fifth thing, come and share your master's happiness. In there, come and share your master's happiness. Happiness. Interesting question. What is happy? Well, for a secular man, happiness is sitting on a beach in Hawaii in your lounge chair, sipping on Mai Tais as the waves roll in, and putting suntan lotion on your body every couple of hours. That is good. Nothing wrong with that. It's a good vacation. But you know, a week from now, you're going to be back at work. And it may be another 6 months before you get to sip Mai Tais on a beach in Hawaii. Or if you're a sports guy, you're going to like this one. If you're a sports guy, what's happiness? Happiness is going to Kobe's last game at the Staples Center. Man, I bought my ticket months ago. I knew that thing would be a sellout. And I know what happiness is for you. You're going to be sitting there taking selfies of you during the whole game. Oh, are they playing basketball? I guess they are. Taking pictures. And you're going to be sending those out on Facebook and Instagram. And you're going to take a video of you that's going to go on Snapchat. And the idea is, I was there. I saw Kobe's last game. And for the next few days at work, you're going to be sort of like a pop idol. Yeah, that guy was, hey, you ought to talk to him. He was at Kobe's last game. Man, what was that like? Tell us what that was like. There's a certain amount of happiness with that. But a week later, nobody's going to really care about that anymore. Happiness. What does it mean? Ask most Christians what happiness is, and committed Christians, they'll tell you, well, happiness is feeling close to God. Now, I like it when I feel close to God. But I have to be honest with you, it seems to me in my experience that that doesn't happen all that often. God could make that happen more often if he wanted to. Why doesn't he? Because I think there's a different kind of joy he wants us to experience that's deeper than feeling close to him. Not saying something bad about feeling close to God. That's a good thing. But he's talking about a different joy than feeling close to God. What is it? Come and share your master's happiness. And when I think of this, I think of he's talking about some kind of joy that's shared between us and the master. And here are the ideas. What was it these guys have been doing for all these years? They'd been serving. They've been taking his money and stewarding that money for him. And what does that mean for us? Well, instead of just coming to church and going, well, what am I going to get out of the service today? You know, I hope the music's good. Hope Seth's sermon's short. Yes, you do. This is the person who wherever they go, whether it's here at church or out in the work world or in your neighborhood, is on a mission. You're serving him. You are being more like Jesus, who moves into the life of people, whether they be nice people or mean people, to try to give them a taste of who he is. That's not easy. That takes a lot of other-centeredness and a lot of self-sacrifice. And a lot of, this isn't very much fun. It's not very convenient. But eventually what happens is the master comes back. And he settles accounts. And he says, I like what you did. It's just like me. Come and share that joy, of shared joy, of laying down your life like I laid down my life for people. One day in heaven, this is going to be one of the richest joys that we experience. Last thing here, the third servant. And here, human nature is laid bare. Several of us in the church that I know of have had medical procedures that involve a camera inside of your body. Can you imagine that? I mean, it's like, wow. And it helps the surgeon to see kind of what he's dealing with or she's dealing with when she goes inside to do the procedure. Well, we sort of get a camera inside of us, an MRI of our human nature in verse 24. Then the man who had received the one talent came, and he has the interview with the master. I knew that you were a hard man, harvesting where you've not sown and gathering where you've not scattered seed. So I was afraid. Went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here's what belongs to you. Now, remember that this is the guy back at the Long Beach Harbor who, as soon as the ship left, got in his car, went home to the garage, and got a shovel. and dug a hole at the very corner of the property and put your retirement money in it for 20 years. And now he's coming back and he's being called into account for this. And the first thing that he does is he shifts the blame from himself to the master. It'd be sort of like the investment guy at the bank where you entrusted your money said, "Well, I didn't do anything, but actually it's your fault." I don't think that would go well with you if you were sitting there. He shifts the blame and he says, "I knew that you're a hard man," and he's going to explain what he means by that, but the word hard in the Greek is the word austeros, from which the Latin word comes austeri, from which we get our English word austere. He says, "I knew that you are an austere man." And the idea here is something of mean, cold, calculating, maybe ruthless. And then he explains his rationale. Harvesting where you've not sown and gathering where you've not scattered seed. In other words, it looks to me like you're the kind of guy that everybody else does all the work and you come in at the end and take all the credit. And I'm sitting here thinking, as you're leaving to go on your big cruise over there, is why should I work so hard for somebody like you? I could go downtown and work Monday to Friday, put in my 40 or 45 or 50 hours a week. For what? Because when you come back, all you're going to do is say, "Look what my money did. I'll be damned if I'm going to go along with that program." In other words, what he's telling him is something of a, "You're an unscrupulous person, and I hold you in contempt." Now, what's striking to me about this particular parable is how we saw earlier how the two servants saw the master and how this guy sees the master. Now, what Jesus lays out before with the other two guys is they look at the master, or the master there, as somebody who's generous. And he's generous in every way. He's generous with his praise. He's lavish with his compliments, with his commendation, with his gratitude and thanks. He's lavish with promotion and perks. And instead of like, "Well, what's in it for me?" he says, "Come on, we are going to share in this joy of what happened. We're celebrating what you did." Now, that's the picture Jesus paints of God the Father, the Master. The question is, how is it that the third guy saw such a completely different picture of the master than the first two guys? Now, I remember sometime in my childhood running across this conundrum at school. And there was, I don't remember who it was, might have been a teacher, where some of the kids in class thought that guy hung the moon, or that girl hung the moon, that woman. And then others just despised that teacher. And I went home and asked my mother about this. I said, how can people have such different views of the same person? And what I remember of her answer is, "Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder." And as she unpacked that, what she was saying was, what one person considers beautiful, another person goes, "What? I don't see anything there." And what she was saying is, the problem is not the person. The problem is in the beholder. Now, what's being exposed here is something like this. This third servant does not want to do what he's been told to do. He does not want to do his assignment. He's committed to not doing it. Now, how does he not do that for 10 or 20 years? He's got to come up with some excuse that makes sense to him, and he does what human nature is so good at. We sort of shoot the messenger, or shoot the boss, or we character assassinate the person. Or as the scriptures describe over and over again, we see what we want to see, we hear what we want to hear, we speak what we want to speak, and worst of all, we conclude what we want to conclude. Perhaps you've talked to somebody about the Lord and they say, "I don't believe in a God of judgment." Same thing. As if That is all the evidence that I'm going to consider about the God you claim to worship and claim is good. End of the matter. That's it. Don't talk to me about God. The same kind of idea. And then he says, I was afraid, and hereby now I hope you see the pretense. I was afraid. You weren't afraid enough. You weren't afraid at all. It's a shallow excuse. Something to let him off the hook. I went out, hid your talent in the ground. See, here's what belongs to you, with the idea of something of as if I am doing something noble by bringing it back to you, meaning I didn't lose it. Now, if you're having a hard time sort of catching on to the how bad this is, think about you back at the investment house. You're ready to retire. You've saved up for 20 years, or so you thought. You click on account activity, boom, nothing. But let's say the guy shows up. And he comes and takes the place of the woman you've talked to, and you say, what did you do? Why didn't you do anything with our money? Stocks, bonds, savings, real estate, anything. What if that guy looked across the desk at you and said, well, you know, I've known you for a while, and you're not the person you think you are. You know, you think you're a pretty high and mighty kind of person, and I just need to do whatever you wanted me to do. I would have worked my buns off every day if I knew that you were going to appreciate what I did after 20 years. But I knew you were not that kind of person. Seemed to be incapable of that. You were just going to go, Lee, come back here, take your money, just gleefully go, look, what a smart investor I am. So you know what you can do? We'll write you a check. You can have your money back. Just good riddance. How would that go over? This is what the third guy did. Back of your handout. Verse 26. The master replies to the third guy, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed? Meaning, that's what you think? That's what you've concluded after watching me? You think I'm that guy? Then he says, even if that was true, on the basis of your own lips, what you should have done is put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Now, why was he wicked? Well, there are a few things that strike me. He was a rebel. I am not going to do what you want me to do. I am going to do what I want to do. Second thing he did was he slandered the master for all those years. Unscrupulous. God's fair? You kid? This world? Have you taken a look at the newspaper recently? I don't think so. And then self-centered before anything else. And then lazy. Lazy. I just want to do what makes me feel good right now. As a priority. Verse 28. The master says, take the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. Which you would do. Again, if you were at the investment house and you realized this, you would take the check, the one talent that you gave, and you would go find the guy that you gave the 5 talents to initially, and you'd give it to him. Of course you would. You'd be an idiot to do anything other than that. This guy's proven himself, shown himself to be faithful. It's what the master did. And Jesus says, for everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. That is the principle. That is how generally, life works. Verse 30. Throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, he wasn't worthless in the sense of a human being because he was made in the third guy was like everybody is made in the image of God. And because of that, we all have amazing worth as a person. But he was worthless in the sense of this, of you just cannot count on this guy to do what's right. You just cannot think that this guy is going to serve the investments of what God has, what you're so supposed to do. He's just not going to do that. You just can't count on him to do that. You'd be silly to count on this guy for almost anything. In that sense, he's worthless. He proved that for 10 or 20 years. All you had to do was check out account activity. As a result of wanting no part of the deal, he ends up with no part of the deal maker. Now, imagine that you're the investment house president. You have no idea this is going on, at least until the first gal who talked to you at the beginning of the interview realized when she saw account activity was vacant for 20 years. When she went to her manager and the manager went to the vice president went to the president, and by this time you'd been on Yelp and on Facebook, and this investment house name was going into mud virally. Guess who now shows up downstairs? The president of the company. And he's going to apologize to you, and he's going to take this guy aside, and he's going to say, let me have your keys. So we haven't decided what we're going to do with you, but right now we're going to escort you out of the building. Because you have tarnished the name of our company that we have spent so many years trying to build. Accountability. Question to ask yourself is, do you tend to see yourself as a somebody entitled? Well, I can do what I want to. Things that God has given me, yeah, I make my own decisions. Or do you see somebody as a servant, you have a duty to obey God and to serve him? Each of us are going to, which direction are we going? But eventually accountability is coming. Just a matter of time. Eventually, we have to answer to what we did, how we lived. There was a school play, Christmas play, at the elementary school, and that was the Nutcracker Suites, back when you could call a Christmas show the Christmas show at school. The Nutcracker Suite, and it was the last day of the performance of Friday night before all the kids were out of school, and there was a mom who was helping at 3 o'clock to get to sell tickets. She was at the table there, and parents were coming in to buy tickets for the last show. Thursday night had been a sellout. Kind of worried about, man, I need to get here quick. And as she's sitting there waiting to purchase tickets, the first woman in line opens up her purse, shakes her head, and says, I can't believe I have to pay to see my own kid perform. Pulls a $10 bill out of her wallet. The woman behind, the mother behind the desk or behind the table says, well, you don't have to pay. Says, here, suggested donation. I know, but it's the principle of the thing. Well, the money helps to go pay for costumes and sets and stuff like that. I know, but it's still the principle of the thing. She plops the $10 bill, puts it across the table and says, two adults, one child rolls her eyes. The mother gets out her change, gives it back to her. And the woman steps aside while she's putting her coins in the coin purse, the money in the wallet, and the tickets in a place in her purse so she'll remember where they are. And while she's doing that, there's a fourth grader behind her. He steps up, and he pulls into his pocket, pulls out a bunch of quarters and dimes and nickels, and pushes them across the table. And she said, and the mom said, well, what are you doing? So I'm buying tickets. She said, well, you don't have to buy tickets. I mean, all the kids get to see the Nutcracker Suite for free during the day. He said, and she pushed the money back across the table to him. He said, well, I know you get to see it at free during the day, but I brought my brother last night. I'm paying for last night. He pushed the money back across the table to her. And she said, well, you mean nobody took your money last night at the play? And he said, no, we got here a little late, and by the time we got here, nobody's working the table. And she said, and she pushed the money back across to him, and she said, well, you don't have to pay then. He says, yes, I do. Two of us were here. He pushed the money back across the table. And she thought, what would a fourth grader like to do with a couple of bucks? A lot of things. And so she said, well, you know, son, Since nobody was here, you don't have to pay, because after all, who would know if you didn't? And he pushed the money right back across the table and he said, I would. And then she got it. And so she took the dimes, nickels, quarters, it was exactly $2, the price of 2 child admissions. And by the time she got the money put in the little slot, looked up, the kid was gone. Now, the first mother who had been complaining about the price of the tickets was still standing there putting the rest of her money away. And she kind of cleared her throat and she said, excuse me. And the mother behind the table looked up and said, yes. And this time the mom had the change in her hand, and she said, she put it down on the table and she pushed it across the table and said, those are pretty neat set designs and the costumes are pretty good. I said, I like that. Take this. She turned and walked off. The mother who was behind the table suddenly realized that 6 days before Christmas, they had just been given the best Christmas gift they could have been given. Better than anything that was going to be under their Christmas tree. Let's pray. Father, though we don't like to admit it, oftentimes we live as if we're the third servant, hardly giving a thought that all of the things that we enjoy and have, all the privileges that we have, and even the responsibilities we have been given because of you, that they don't belong to us. And though we complain of people who are entitled and feel entitled in our country, oftentimes that's sort of how we live in relation with you. Lord Jesus, this is a striking parable. And I pray that it not be striking for some of us 10 years from now, or 20 years from now, or 40 or 50 years from now. That someday we would look back and go, oh no, I remember Seth talked about that. I remember this parable. What was I thinking? Why wasn't I listening? Why didn't I heed? Why didn't I see this? Why didn't I take ownership of this? You don't want to be at that point 10, 30, 50 years from now. You want to hear his voice today and align yourself with the lives of the first two servants in this parable.